on Friday, September 27th, 1996. Thanks, Bill. As you know, I've been working on a project about the history of the Labor Industrial Relations Center, and gave this talk a year ago that appeared in the newsletter. And after you saw it, you realized, since you were there, that some of it was accurate and some of it wasn't. You had some different recollections. So you agreed we'd chat about it a little bit.
Sure.
Just as background, if you're willing to say when and where you were born, and when and why you came to MSU, and in what capacity?
I was born in 1928 in Petoskey, Michigan. I came to Michigan State in 1957, partly as a result of an offer that combined a position in sociology and in the Labor Industrial Relations Center. So I had a half-time research appointment, and the center at that time also provided a research assistant and small research budget, and so it was a very nice position to come to.
Why were you interested in labor relations at that point in your life?
Well, industrial sociology was the area that I had concentrated on in graduate school.
Where'd you go to grad school?
At Wayne State.
Uh-huh.
And the dissertation was a study of automation, the kind of social consequences and social psychological consequences for workers of automation in the Mound Road engine plant, which at that time was a highly automated plant, although not by today's standards.
Uh-huh. But
it was so-called Detroit automation, which was largely a matter of inline transfer equipment.
So this was one of the big automation stories of the 50s that auto workers got kind of afraid about, that technology of the day was going to displace them, one of those? Or?
Well, it wasn't so much about the effects on job displacement as it was on changes in the nature of the job itself.
What do you mean?
I was interested in effects on job satisfaction. I was interested in effects on general attitudes toward work. Part of the dissertation also dealt with labor management relations, but that was a small part of it. It was mostly about the ways in which people responded to automation. And at the time, the school, not the school, the center, at that time was interested in initiating research on automation. And I presume I was hired because I had that interest.
I have a...
And we did do a series of studies once I got here.
I have two volumes of an annotated bibliography that Einar Hardin did mm-hmm. on automation.
Mm-hmm.
Was that something you were involved with? I can't remember looking at it.
Not really. No, we did it.
That's another example of the school's interest in the topic at the time.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
We did a study of...
Who's we?
Bill
Form?
It was Einar Hardin mm-hmm. and I, and Gene Jacobson may also have been involved.
Mm-hmm.
It was a study of the effects of the introduction of computers insurance company in Howell. Is that Citizens? Is that what it is?
Something like that. I know
yeah.
what you mean.
We did a study there, but this was relatively small by comparison, again, to the office automation that exists now. These were IBM 650s, and they were not much mm-hmm. more than glorified files, and we didn't find that there was very much consequence.
You wrote a book later, Problems in Industrial Sociology, which is
well,
that the title, something like that.
Yeah, the book was called Problems of Industrial Society.
Okay.
Was
that kind of in some ways a follow-up of this dissertation in some ways, or not really, or that was
no.
more broad? Or?
Yeah, it was broader than that.
Uh-huh.
There was a chapter in it on effects of technological change,
yeah.
but it was much broader than the dissertation.
Mm-hmm.
It had a chapter dealing with alienation and freedom in industrial societies, and the focus of the book, which I think was somewhat unique, was that it dealt with problems that I was arguing are particular consequences of industrialism. I mean, problems in industrial societies include the poverty and divorce, and the social problems courses deal with those things. But what I was trying to do was deal not with problems in industrial societies, but problems of them. They were problems of the sort that are exacerbated, created and exacerbated by increasing industrialization.
I know I was looking at it when I was just starting to look at Work and Leisure, and it just 4 or 5 pages, but it sort of summarized the thoughts and research at that point in the literature on that topic. So you're right, you did lots of things. What happened to the dissertation in terms of other writings about that Mound Road plant?
I published a series of articles. There were one in the American Sociological Review, I think there was another one in the American Journal of Sociology, and there was one in Social Problems, and I wrote a couple chapters for books from it.
So what can you tell me about the Labor Industrial Relations Center when you came, and how it was structured, and how faculty related, and those kind of things?
Well, it was 1957. It was organized so that there was a research unit, which was composed, I think, exclusively of people who had joint appointments in other departments. And there was the Labor Program Service and the Personnel Management Program Service. There were those three components.
Did you just spend all your time in the research area? Or?
Yes, I did. Well, I mean, you know, we had staff meetings, so I saw everybody else. And Fred Haler was in charge of the Labor Program Service at that time.
Who was management at that time?
It's when I first got there, I believe it was, well, I've forgotten his name, but you mentioned him in that article, the guy who...
Rogers?
Yeah, Rogers was. Then I think it was, what's his name, Tom Ford? It was Tom somebody. Uh-huh. Maybe it was Tom somebody who used to work for Ford. But anyways.
Okay. Anyways, tell me about what went on in the research area. Who were the faculty, and what projects did you do?
The center was encouraging some kinds of research, like that on automation. And we did the study I mentioned at Citizens, and I did some additional writing with the support of that. Some articles from the dissertation were written as part of my assignment at the center. We then did a sizable study of the governance system in the UAW. Did a lot of interviews with locals in both Flint and Lansing, and a study at the National Convention in the annual convention in the Daniel. Anyway, it was at the convention in Atlantic City.
Is this what led up to Jack Stieber's book? Or is that
some of the material from that study is in Jack's book, but he also, I think, he had data from Steele or some other places too.
Well, he did a Steele book, but he did a UAW book too.
Yeah, well, it was the work that we did. I'm sure. Well, I know it's part of that book, but his interest was somewhat broader.
What did you do on the UAW study then, and who was the we in that one? Did the labor educators help on that at all, or
not really? Those units were pretty separate at the time, and we didn't.
No mixing across.
Not really. We were. The research was done pretty much independently of the work that was done in both Labor Program Service and the Personnel Management Program Service. They were doing mostly off-campus kinds of things. There was not a lot of work that involved people from units other than the research unit. But those people that were in that unit were from psychology and economics and sociology and political science. Henry Smith from psychology was involved. Gene Jacobson from psychology. Lena Hardeen from economics. I was from sociology. Bill Former from sociology.
Was there anybody from anthro or geography or any of those kind of areas?
Not that I recall.
Or anybody out of the social sciences and the history, humanities, arts areas?
No.
So pretty much it was economics, sociology, psychology?
And political science.
And political science. Who was the political scientist?
What was his name? He has since died. He was really more concerned with political philosophy, but they were supporting him because he was doing work on Mexican labor leaders. I think he wrote a book on Mexican labor leaders.
I could look that up.
I'll think of his name in a minute.
It seems to me there are a couple unique people, like Lash LaRue spent some amount of time
at
the joint appointment.
Yes, he was there on joint appointment, that's right. I'd forgotten him.
And Walter Adams, I think, told me that he even had some connection with the school in its early days.
Might have, although I don't remember his being there when I got
might have
there.
Been before
but
you.
Might have been, yeah. Although I think they, didn't they start in 55 or something? And I.
Yeah.
I came in 57.
56.
So.
January 56 is what they claim for their date, although it looks like the labor education begins in 53, actually before it's a center, but that's a little fuzzy at the moment because it precedes REPA, so it precedes my earliest interview. I have to do some more interviewing.
Well, I arrived in September of 57, so
September 57?
It wasn't long after the center had started.
Now, did you report to Jack Stieber then?
No, initially to Killingsworth, but then
okay.
I think it was the next year to Stieber. Or,
okay.
But it was Killingsworth who hired me anyway. I remember that. You ask who was involved in the UAW research.
Or
yeah, it was, Jack.
PhD students?
Well, there were. You know, of course, they that was one of the nice things about the positions that they were providing at the time in the research service, because they gave us a research assistant.
Uh-huh.
So I had research assistants from sociology and
Well,
I've got a dissertation out of that.
Who's that?
George Wan.
Okay. Any other names over the years that I might recognize from...
From graduate students, or...?
Yeah, who went on to become faculty or wrote anything that... Doesn't matter, just curious.
Yeah, no, I don't...
Just curious.
Nobody who stayed around here, anyway. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were several people who... I think the school provided some support for me. It may have, my recollection is fuzzy about this, but I did a study that involved cross-cultural comparisons.
What was that?
In Guatemala and Costa Rica and the U.S.
On work issues? What was that like?
Well, it was community status structures and the effects of those on attitudes toward work. That was part of that study.
Guatemala, U.S. and what?
Costa Rica.
So you went to those places?
Yeah, I did.
What kind of workers would you study there?
Well, the focus was really on the community and community status structures, but the general point of the research was that. Let me back up. What I was suggesting as a kind of central hypothesis was that. The immediate social experience of people in these communities had a more powerful effect on status arrangements and attitudes toward work and whatever than did the broader setting of the society in which they live. We keep talking about the effects of being in a developed country or an underdeveloped country. Well, each of those has such variation in terms of the nature of social experience within it that it, I was arguing that it's the more immediate experience that does it. So what I found was an industrial town in a non-industrial society. That's the one in Costa Rica. There was a plant that made fiber rugs and mats that employed most of the people in the town, either making
export
the rugs
or just for home consumption.
I think they may have exported some too, although the major markets were in Costa Rica. The Guatemalan community was a non-industrial, it was a subsistence-level agricultural village in a non-industrial society. The Michigan village was a non-industrial, essentially tourist town that was
that one?
Lewiston, Michigan.
Oh, I know Lewiston. So did you spend some time in Lewiston?
Oh, yeah. Spent a whole summer up there interviewing people. And
While fishing?
Fishing,
or?
Yes. It was one of the reasons for picking that. It met all the other requirements, but it also had some good trout streams nearby. So
did you ever do any work on leisure and writings about leisure when you were studying that?
Not in that.
Did anybody ever in SOCH do much about leisure activities or tourism in Michigan? Did you have anything to do with?
Nothing that I had anything to do with.
I wrote
about leisure, but it would, that had to do with the amounts of leisure and the effects of probable effects of technological change on that. That was the.
I'm fascinated in terms of leisure and tourism, and I want to do some stuff on work leisure and do some interviews.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I'll go to Lewiston and interview some people fishing.
Sure.
Talk to them about that. So here, there was another example: cross-cultural comparisons, the UAW governance interviews, the Citizens Project on automation. What else did you do in your years in having the joint status? And when did you leave and just become a social pro?
Well, I was teaching sociology all the time.
The time.
It was a half-time appointment.
Mm-hmm.
Half-time in each, which was a really good arrangement. I'd get the usual kinds of calls you get early in your career when you publish some things and people want to know if you're interested in moving, and I'd describe my job saying that I teach half-time and I've got a half-time research appointment and a research assistant and some small research budget provided by the Labor Industrial Relations
mm-hmm.
Center, and they would say, you got a good job. I couldn't find anything that was as good as that anyplace else. But I wasn't actively looking because
mm-hmm.
it was a good job. But it was the support of the center which made it an attractive job,
mm-hmm.
providing all that research support.
How much did you teach then for social? One class, two classes?
Well, I think a half-time appointment at that time was two classes a term, but that's what I was doing.
Do you think you taught six classes a year?
I think that was a half-time load at that time.
Wow.
They changed it later, but that was half-time in 1957.
So six classes. What sort of size was classes in the late 50s? Any idea?
Well, they vary considerably, but there was I was teaching very large social psychology courses and industrial social courses, I suppose 200-300 in some of them. But that was a time when there was lots of money available and we had lots of research, lots of teaching assistants. And it was 1960, must have been 65, when I became the associate director for research in the center. And I was in that position for 3 years.
Who are you replacing?
I guess it was Jack, wasn't it? I think.
Well, Jack became director in
59.
So
it
wasn't
Jack. It was Bill Form. Bill Form had been research director for a
okay.
while. That's right. Yeah, Bill Form became research director after Jack,
mm-hmm.
and then he went back in the department. He went back in the department as department chair, and I became research director.
And you did that 65, 68?
Yep, for 3 years. Then I left that because I became chair of the sociology department. I was following Bill Form around.
Huh. And at that point, did you leave LIR?
Yeah. Yeah,
okay.
Well,
they kind of discontinued the joint connections, I think, around that time.
Yeah, they had done it, I think, before that. Or.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they may be in the process. I've forgotten when.
You allowed to sort of grandparent, grandfather longer than other people? That you
well,
would keep
I,
both?
No, I think by the time that I was, when I was research director, I think they still had joint appointments up until the time that I became research director, because I don't think I'd have taken that job if they didn't have a
mm-hmm.
research support of the kind that, the research program that I thought I was heading was the one that did involve joint appointments. And
so when I wrote in the article that when it became a school in 62, the grant program was added in 65, I sort of am a little fuzzy in what I wrote, and I don't know which it was. I have the ending of dual appointments sometime between 62 and 65. I don't really state which it was.
Yeah. And I don't know. My recollection is not...
Okay.
But
But in that would be the time period when it ended.
Yeah.
Was that
well,
a...
You know, it doesn't, I don't think it... I'm not sure it ended immediately when it became a school.
Uh-huh.
So I remember arguing at length in meetings that you can't add a master's program without giving up something.
Mm-hmm.
I knew what they were going to give up. They can't give up labor program service or personnel management program service. They will be cutting the research program. And of course, that's what happened.
Why did you figure they wouldn't give up labor education or management extension?
Well, they were doing things that were different from the more university based. I mean, the what I'm saying is that they were doing mostly off campus kinds of things,
right.
and conferences and so on. The adding an academic program, I assume, would probably cut into what. Well, I guess I just also thought that the research program was probably more vulnerable in terms of the general mission of the school. I mean, they were.
To what extent was the mission of the school really land grant extension and research was added on, or to what extent was it a real hole? Was it hiding labor extension within a academic umbrella? Was it, you know what I'm getting at?
Yeah, I didn't really sense any of that.
Okay.
When I arrived, I saw the research program as a kind of, you know, core part of the mission of the center, and I thought there was, you know, good work going on in the research program. And
I mean, Jake certainly felt, I think, that he accomplished a great deal heading up in his early years the research before then Bill Form took over and before you did.
Yeah, I thought that was an integral part of the program. Mm-hmm. We didn't realize we were hiding anything.
Okay.
And
just
also, in the, I didn't see any inaccuracies in the piece that you wrote there.
Oh, you did?
But in terms of, I mean, there may be minor things I don't know in terms of recollection of, you're talking about dates, I don't remember those.
Yeah.
But in terms of the emphasis in the center, the piece that you wrote really sounds as though the labor program service was sort of the core of the thing, and the others were grafted onto this, and I had no sense of that.
I thought
the research program involved a lot of people and was a very successful program. Personnel management was smaller, but I think, again, the reason for that is that they had a whole business school over there with all kinds of stuff going on in personnel management, so their area of operation was sort of squeezed by what was going on other parts of the campus.
Mm-hmm.
But the research service was not in any way subsidiary. I mean, the research program was, I thought, an integral and important part of the school. So that, the emphasis on the labor program service, you know, while obviously it was an important part of what was going on, and you know, Fred Haler is a very forceful director. I mean, he doesn't take back seats in any circumstance. So it was an important part of what was going on, but we were not in any way ancillary to the. I mean, the research program was not in any way ancillary to the, in a sense, less academically oriented programs.
Yeah,
they were at that time anyway. I mean, they were off campus.
I think I was trying to. I didn't mean to imply that it was ancillary.
And I don't even remember the. I only vaguely remember the incident that you were reporting from
the state senate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I vaguely remember that happening, but I didn't think of that as any great threat, and the addition of the master's program was, in terms of the discussions about it at the time, I think done not so much to legitimize the school in the eyes of the legislature, but rather to build a firmer base of support within the university for the school. That is, if you have if you're offering academic courses, you are now more centrally located with respect to the on-campus part of the mission, and I think that they that at the time, they saw that as an opportunity to get more clout within the university by offering a program that didn't exist elsewhere and that did catch a kind of crest of interest at the time in labor management relations.
Why was that interest going at that time?
There are fads and fashions in the academia. I don't know. There was
the size of the labor movement, the fact that some newspaper or magazine articles talked about a laboristic society, that labor was big and powerful, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and I suppose the wave of strikes that happened after the war really focused attention on labor management relations, and the unions came out strong from that period, and so it was there was in sociology an interest in labor management relations.
Who were the people in social interest?
Here, Bill Form and I. Nationally, Robert Dubin, William Foote White, from a very different perspective. I mean, Dubin was writing about labor management relations as power relations and from a kind of political perspective. William Foote White was writing about the interpersonal relations and kind of human relations at the plant level. Those were two kinds of poles in looking at labor management relations, and they're really different things. You know, they're not. But there was some, ideological kinds of overtones to that debate. It was the people who were doing the human relations kind of, or had the human relations vision of labor management relations, were really conservative sorts who thought if you could just treat people right, then there wouldn't be any need for labor movement.
There's still a common thinking out there in the world today.
Oh yeah, but the idea that people get their own interests represented, and that there's some dignity involved, and then having say because you have some power, and was recognized by people like Bob Doolin and by my mentor at Wayne.
Who's that?
Harold Shepard. Harold Shepard.
I have a book of his, or him and another person, kind of a famous, I think.
Yeah, well, he wrote quite a bit. He was writing from a ideologically left position, and was was a very good sociologist. It was Wayne was a very good department at that time. There were just some very good people there, and a very exciting place to be.
What attracted you to Wayne? From Petoskey, or did you come through East Lansing on the way?
Yeah, well, I came through Big Rapids and East Lansing. I came here in the 10th grade, and the history of my selection of places to go to school, the college, was largely a result of waiting around to get drafted. And I thought I was going to get drafted in 1946, but they ended the draft, and I was here, and because I was here and hadn't even thought about anything else, I went to Michigan State for undergraduate. Then by the time I finished the 1950...
Finished what?
The BA.
At MSU.
The Korean War had started, and I was 1A and was waiting around to get drafted, and it got to be September, and what I did in September was go to school, and I was living in Detroit at that time, so I went to Wayne.
Gotcha.
And when I got out of the Army, Wayne State was just starting its PhD program, and they really made me an offer I couldn't refuse. They gave me, in 1953, a $3,500 fellowship, which was a lot of money in those days. So I stayed on there, and I was happy to be there anyway. It was a good good department at that time. And Hal Shepard was there, and I was interested in industrial sociology, and there were some other people. There were also some people in labor economics that I wanted to take coursework with, and did. I had a doctoral minor in labor economics.
Who were your profs there?
Yeah, it's been a long time. There was a Mark, labor education, labor economics. Mark. Arthur Kornhauser was in psychology, and I, of course, worked from him.
Who came up with the idea of going to Mount Road and doing interviews and stuff there?
It was pretty much a result of joint discussions with my advisor, with Hal Shepard. And then I got a small grant from Paul Silver's local. You know Paul?
So the union was interested in having somebody study it?
Yeah.
And because of the automation issue or because of...
The automation issue. Yeah, okay. They wanted to know some things about what was going on. I think they didn't understand what I had in mind, however. I think they were hoping I'd come up with some kind of indictment of the automobile industry. And
well, there were songs, there was a lot of written material that I've read and collected that I sometimes teach people that in the late 80s there was a lot of fear about new technology, as it was called, displacing everybody, and I've taught people about the late 50s and some similarities in terms of the auto industry about the fears then. And there was downsizing and there was changes. A lot of people thought that the sky was falling and it'd be the end of the American auto industry in the late 50s.
Yeah, but what was happening was such an expansion of the industry at the time that, I mean, they were building new plants and people wanted to transfer to the automated plants because they saw that as the future. And They did that on the basis, when they opened Monroe, they did that on the basis of seniority. People.
I assume they were cleaner, safer jobs.
Yeah, they were cleaner and safer. They were also, however, at that time, space so that we had nobody to talk to.
No.
These long inline transfer machines, some of them were like almost a city block long in that plant. And the workstations were situated so that people were sometimes 50, 60 yards from each other.
But you said some people wanted to bump into that.
Well, they wanted to because they thought it was a more certain
future.
Job, you know, certain future in terms of job security, and well, also it was cleaner and safer and less. I mean, if you move from a circumstance in which you are wrestling engine blocks around on those overhead conveyors and pushing them into the machines and clamping them in and then machining them, to a circumstance in where you never even see the engine block as it transfers, you know, through these closed machines and automatically, where at each station does whatever you're going to do to them.
How many hours did you spend in that plant? Year of your life, or?
Well, it wasn't not that long. The study was going on over a year. I didn't. I visited it quite often, and at least initially, management was also cooperative and were interested in. But then
they lost interest.
I think not as a result of my doing. I was working my way up through General Motors at one point, talking to people at higher and higher levels. And at one point, I talked to the guy who was head of the Buick Oldsmobile Pontiac division of General Motors. That's vice president kind of level, and. And I was talking with him about this research and what I wanted to do, and he was very interested. And couldn't have been more than a couple of weeks after that, I went back, and they said, automation, what's that? We don't have any automation. The word went out, and there was no more talk to anybody from outside about any technological change. They just, it was amazing how, and I said, at one point, because I was interested in some things having to do with the effects of automation on labor management relations, I sent out questionnaires to everyone who had signed the contract from both sides. Every one of those questionnaires I sent out wound up on one desk.
On the management side or both sides?
No, on the management side.
What about the union side?
No, I got responses on the union side from people. I think that, you know, there had been some consultation, it looked like, but but management just every person I sent it to sent it back to the same office in General Motors, and this guy says, I got a whole pile of questionnaires here. What do you want me to do with them?
So they never answered it.
No.
Who were the union people? Do you remember it? Any names I would have ever heard of? Or?
Well, I'm sure you would have. But, I mean, the people who signed that contract, but I can't remember who they were.
Do you have a copy of that contract?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I might have. No, I probably don't anymore.
That's local what?
I should remember that, but I don't at the moment.
Okay.
In fact, I don't know. That plant's still in operation. Maybe it is, but the Mondor engine plant, is that still going? Or?
It's been too long. I'm not positive. Yeah. I used to drive by it when I was a kid all the time. back to the, anything else?
I had spent, but I knew something about automobile plants.
144, I could name numbers, and yeah. I don't know that I remember off the top of my head.
I knew something about automobile plants because I'd worked in
where?
Two summers. I worked at the old Dodge Main plant in Hamtramck all one summer, and I worked all another summer in the Lincoln plant in, down in Livernois.
I did one summer at Fisher Body at just off the GM building, that one, just east.
That experience helped, you know, when I was doing the study, because I knew, had some sense of what automobile production line jobs were about. And I could.
Is that what you work production line?
Yeah, I was at Dodge Main. I was putting the glue around the door before they put the rubber stripping around. And at the Lincoln plant, I started out buffing cars after they came out of the paint room they went through. But I wound up that summer driving cars from the lot where they were stored after they came off the end of the production line to places where they were going to be shipped, I mean to the railway where they're heading, where they were doing that.
If you don't mind, I'll go back to a couple things more about the article.
Yeah.
No, that's all right. I'm very interested in what you're talking about, actually, more so. Partly, I think, the emphasis I put was my job, my career here, and that sort of thing. Partly, it's who I had interviewed and what they sort of recalled about the story. Partly, it was some of the written record, though, that came out of this Senate hearing and what Hannah said about it. One person, and I haven't had a chance to talk to Haler, one person sort of assumed that Haler probably wrote Hannah's response, that that's really what that reflects, and that might be part of why there is that labored emphasis in the whole story of the Senate hearing.
Well, I understand why there's the emphasis there, because they were objecting to that film.
Right.
I think that was the... as I say, I do remember the reaction to that film, and I saw the film. It was a... and they were really upset about that, that this guy in the Senate was.
Did you ever show that film in class? We didn't have any reason to?
Didn't have any reason to, I think. I did, in the industrial sociology course, I did show some... I showed... There's a film about the... Triangle Shirtwaist Fire.
Right.
It's a powerful film.
Mm-hmm.
You show an 8 o'clock class that film, all those women burning up, it kind of gets their attention. Anyway.
Good thinking.
But the in the discussion, see the context in which the shift from center to school was debated, in my recollection, was largely a question of should we or should we not add a master's program? And the reasons for adding it, at least in those discussions, as I recall them, didn't have much to do with protecting the school against the, the inroads from the Senate, but rather, the issue of what its effect would be in terms of the long-run development of the school and the advantages of having an academic program in terms of then, dealing with the dean and with other people on the...
Who was the dean?
I think McQuitty probably would have been... Well, no, it was, when I first came, it was... what was his name? He was a real character in Anglophile... had a picture of Queen Elizabeth on his wall and a big black dog that used to sit under his desk, and I came walking in when I was being interviewed for the job and sat down and put my feet under his desk and stepped on his dog, and I thought, God, there goes that job. The dog let out a yelp and running out. What was his name? I've forgotten.
Cantlin comes a lot later.
Oh, yeah.
That's okay.
Well, Kent was provost. He was never dean of social science.
Okay.
There was a literature, science, and arts. There wasn't a college of social science when I first came. It was a kind of general arts and sciences. But then it was McQuitty, and then the guy that then subsequently became provost. Anyway, they when I first got there, it was not McQuitty. It was
don't worry about it.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to get some fill in terms of the issue about what was going on.
Yeah.
Who are the people that were debating? I know I make a comment based on something, either an interview I did with Killingsworth or something that he put in an article, I don't remember off the top of my head, but he sort of noted in that he really opposed the idea of becoming a school and that he kind of opposed adding the degree program. Do you recall that, where Killingsworth fit, or who was on what side of the debate and how close it was or anything like that in terms of institutional history? Or even how you felt?
Well, I can report how I felt, but I really don't know who was on which sides. I have a feeling that Jack was supporting the addition of the master's program.
Uh-huh.
And I think, for the reasons that I mentioned, I think he saw it as providing more leverage, more access to resources on the campus. I didn't object to the idea of adding, and I don't think anybody was objecting to the idea of adding a master's program. I was objecting to adding a program without any additional resources, which is what they did. They didn't get any special extra money for adding a master's program. They took it out of what they had.
So you wanted the dean to come through with something in terms of finances?
Yeah, as I say, I was quite sure that for reasons that I'm not sure I can reconstruct, that it would be the research program that got cut if they added a master's program.
Mm-hmm. Were there big issues about ending dual appointments? That just sort of faded out after it became school? Or?
Yeah, the feeling it kind of faded. It wasn't that they it ended abruptly. I think they kind of phased it out. There were fewer and fewer, and my recollection is that that's what happened. They didn't add any new people and other people.
At that time, was tenure in the school? Was this a shift that somebody was having? They're no longer, their tenure was in social or econ, but their tenure would be in a new school, labor relations. Was that risky or a subject of some concern to faculty? Is that the point when you left about this?
I don't remember it being an issue. I think that the people who were, I think it would not have been an issue in the research program because everybody had, had tenure in the departments they came from.
Mm-hmm.
The people in the labor and personal management program service, I assume, already had tenure in that, didn't they, at that time in the school?
I believe I'd have to go listen to those interviews. I believe they had their home in the center from the beginning. I think Lipus never had a joint program, and I don't remember if Haler did or not.
Mm-hmm. I don't think so.
But the research people did.
Yeah.
They had the joint appointments,
yeah.
But I don't think the labor and management extension people did.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have big fights in those days about giving tenure to people without PhDs, and was that a discussion? I mean, we certainly have in the last decades.
Yeah. I don't remember it being an issue at all. The operations of the labor program service and personal management program service were so separate from the research program, and everybody in the research program had tenure someplace.
How often did you meet as a whole school faculty? Once a year?
Oh,
monthly?
No.
What do you think?
Oh, I think it was at least monthly, maybe more often. Mm-hmm. We were meeting more often than that at the during the time when there was that shift from the center to the school, when they added the master's
would there
program.
Be reports so that REPUS would be reporting, I taught this class in these towns, and you'd be reporting, I'm doing this research and this thing? Was it that kind of exchange, or was it more just the associate director sharing? Or
There would be occasional reports about research, but not really very much. It was only more, not so much My recollection is that it was mainly just sort of day-to-day things that we talked about, not except in the case of the that change when they added the MLIR. And we met fairly often when we moved from basement of Marshall Hall, or Morrill, Marshall Hall.
Marshall.
Econ. Yeah. From the basement of Marshall to South Catsea.
What year was that?
Well, it was sometime between 65 and 68, mm-hmm. because I was, Jack made me the person in charge of the move. And
so you physically had to carry all the books?
No, I had to plan it. I guess who was going where and what they were still. I think they were building that building, and or at least the interior of the of that floor was being designed in terms of what we wanted. So I was doing things like that, and I thought I'd get myself a corner office as long as I was responsible for the whole thing.
Where was your office in South Kinsey? You remember the number?
It was on the. The west end on the south corner, and the director's office was right across the hall.
In South Kinsey? The director's office is in the southeast corner.
Yeah, you changed the whole. It's now the other end, but we were at the west end. We were off. The offices were on the west end, and I was in the corner, and Jack was.
When did the shift go from west to east? After you left.
After I left. I don't know when it happened.
I'll have to ask Stieber about that. That's momentous. I should write a footnote about that. Anything else I should do in the article to sort of fix some emphasis or at least make a footnote comment about not everybody agrees about the emphasis?
You mean the emphasis in your article?
Yeah. When I revise it to publish it. You told me a couple times that.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything that I would add to it.
Different perspective on the emphasis. Yeah. That makes sense to me. I think I know why.
Yeah.
And I'll do a little more checking and research, and I need to talk to Fred about it.
Yeah, I mean, I was looking at it from my perspective, which was in the research program, but when I saw what else was going on, and it was the research program was a important part of the.
Mm-hmm. It was pretty exciting. Thank you very much for letting me do this interview. It'll help me out.
Okay, good.
Cool.
If I think of anything to add, I will. I can't.
Thanks. Yeah, I don't have to do an interview for it. But this is helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.